Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pixels and Profits. It's been a minute since we recorded our last episode, but Matthew and Brian, you guys got some fans. They're demanding more Pixels and Profits, so here we are. And today we are going to be talking about NVIDIA. Yes, NVIDIA, the AI GPU, and we'll go into more about the business company. They do have a bit of a gaming business, which we'll talk about. It's kind of like a rounding error compared to the data center stuff, but certainly something that we will go into in a little bit more depth since we are Pixels and Profits. But before we dive in, guys, how are you guys doing? And what is it going to take for us to do more Pixels and Profits to to satisfy your audience?
I think getting more suggestions on topics would be great. I think that's probably the hardest part, right? I mean, the preparation is not easy, but also just, you know, hearing what people want to talk about.
Absolutely. If you guys want to tell us what you want us to break down and dive into, that can definitely help a lot, because, you know, we always want to cover interesting topics, but they need to be interesting to people that are paying attention. So yeah, let us know in the comments.
Right.
And I'd also like to do more video game content so I can research by playing video games instead of going through financial statements would be sick.
Yeah. Let's definitely do that. I've got some ideas as well, but and maybe even like some private companies to some degree, like Epic, Supercell, companies like that. But just for our audience to kind of set the stage on what we're going to be talking about. So we're going to start with an overview of NVIDIA's business. We'll talk about future drivers of growth, valuation discussion, and basically the future outlook for the company. NVIDIA is it is one of the most important companies in the world right now. So clearly a good company to cover. And I think the gaming aspects of it are also interesting. So, but let's go ahead and dive right in. I'm going to kick it over to you, Matthew, to start us on the overview of NVIDIA's business.
Absolutely. So it's kind of important to think about NVIDIA as it was, and then how it is kind of has been over the last few years with this AI boom, because, you know, to your point, we all know NVIDIA for gaming GPUs prior to, let's call it 2020. You know, if we look at the NVIDIA's got one of those weird fiscal years, their year ends in January 2020. So if we look at the 3 months ending January 2020, that's before COVID. So before we had the big boom in gaming and COVID, it's before the crypto bubble in 2021 and 22 that affected GPUs. The company NVIDIA generated about $1.5 billion of total revenue from gaming, which is about half their total revenue as a whole company. They generated about $1 billion from data center sales. They were still at that time selling, you know, GPUs for AI workloads then, but it was by no means as big as it is today. And then they have these other segments. They have professional visualization. They have automotive. They were doing stuff with Tesla at one point, right before Tesla started to do their own chips and other automakers, right? So, you know, they have all these other segments that made up the rest of the pie. If we fast forward to the most recent quarter, which is the quarter ending January of this year, NVIDIA generated $18 billion of revenue from data center, which is more than 80% of their total revenue, with gaming at $2.9 billion. So gaming has doubled in that period over the 4 years, but data center has grown just absolutely exponentially in that period and completely overtaken everything else. And like, as important as these businesses might be to relevant people in the industries, professional visualization, automotive, just not relevant anymore, not relevant to the investment case. We don't even need to spend time on it. It's really just, it's data center, it's AI, maybe gaming at some point again becomes important, and then everything else is just kind of irrelevant. And so, you know, what's going on and what's caused this massive tidal wave shift if you've been living under a rock, right? It's generative AI and how that's taking off. But I think it's also, you know, just how intuitive, we talked about this a while back, right? How the ChatGPT moment was really more of a wake-up call because it was such an intuitive user interface for the application of AI that it got so many executives thinking on how they can actually leverage this. And that's, I think, what really has been different in this AI cycle is we have a use case, we have a user interface that's easy to interact with, and it's caused a huge demand boom for AI. If you kind of widen the bubble and call it accelerated compute, which encompasses all sorts of, you know, data center servers that don't just run on traditional CPUs, but they run on other types of chips to help them do fancy workloads, you know, accelerated compute is better suited for specific workloads like AI than traditional CPUs, because they're just more specific, more defined for these types of applications. Historically, roughly 10% of data center capacity was accelerated. This is rapidly getting closer to 20%. It might even be past that at this point. And, you know, the way that things are trending, you know, we're pushing towards a world where 50%, 75% of total data center infrastructure at some point will be accelerated. So that's kind of where this groundswell of demand has come from a fundamental level. You know, I think I'll pause there and JK, I'll let you jump in.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that the way that NVIDIA has described their business originally is that they make GPUs to power the human imagination, but now they're making GPUs to power simulating human intelligence. And clearly the human intelligence aspect is a much bigger market than human imagination. But I think the short of what we're talking about and what you mentioned, Matthew, is that to some degree, NVIDIA kind of won the lottery, right? GPUs are kind of perfect or, you know, very well matched for enabling LLM capabilities for training and inference tasks for AI. And I would say like since, for me, it was like since the start of Tesla Investor Day, but then where everybody got excited, as you mentioned, you know, ChatGPT, there's just been like this explosion of required infrastructure investment into buying their NVIDIA A100s, H100s, so that you can develop AI capabilities. So it's kind of like they struck lightning, right time, right place. They had the right thing. There weren't, you know, they spent years developing this technology. There weren't many other people who could develop that technology. And so they absolutely, you know, struck lightning. And in terms of the customers, they've got a lot of huge, big tech firms that are really investing heavily into this space. So companies like Tesla for vision, for their, you know, full self-driving, things like that. OpenAI, of course, for ChatGPT. Meta and Microsoft as other big examples of the kind of major customers that they have. And many of these companies are basically building, whether it's OpenAI-like conversational text-based or dialogue-based research capabilities, generative AI, and vision as some of the primary applications that these companies are working on. But you also have, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of AI startups working on various capabilities leveraging AI. And so clearly we're kind of maybe early, maybe even mid, I don't know, stages of like this massive infrastructure deployment phase. And on top of that, I would say NVIDIA benefits from a competitive standpoint because they're more hardware focused. And, you know, if this were a software company, you know, you could kind of just hire some programmers, buy some laptops or PCs, you know, do some code, throw some stuff up on AWS, and you're ready to go compete against another software company. But I'm not a hardware expert here, but, you know, building a foundry, or even if you partner with like a TSMC, it's just much bigger competitive moat. So that kind of takes us to where we are today in terms of like NVIDIA's business and how they're actually pretty well positioned.
Yeah, I would just add, and then Brian, love for you to jump in also, but like, you know, NVIDIA is an overnight success made over 30 years, right? You know, they've been investing in GPU technology for the 30 plus years that they've been a company. I'm excited to actually read Tae Kim's new book coming out later this year, which is all about the history of NVIDIA, the history of Jensen Huang. So very excited to read that personally. But, you know, I think if, you know, I think the company almost went bankrupt twice, you know, building GPUs because like nobody wanted them and it was a useless, you know, task for a while. But it just shows that, you know, there's a lot of like entrepreneurial spirit and a lot of, you know, real drive that took this company from a vision to where they are today. You know, this by no means was an accident. This was, you know, very much the plan and very much, you know, okay, maybe they didn't predict when ChatGPT was going to blow up and when enterprise demand for AI was going to happen, but they were prepared for it. And I think that's, you know, there's going to be a lot of long-term learnings, and that's not the purpose of this podcast, but important to kind of, you know, when you think about it, it's not like it's just hype and then they're at front and center. They've been here for 30 years.
It's also kind of cool to think about just the birth of the semiconductor industry. A lot of that in the Valley here was really brought out from just kind of like nerdy game dev companies, right? Like AMD, Intel, all of these companies at the earlier onset were developing just basic chips to play video games, and then it exploded. And for if like a 30-year trend, if you want to backtrack a little bit, If you take a long view on proliferation of data and the understanding that there's going to be more data to store, to aggregate, to analyze, the only thing that could really do that was a chip that was made to play a video game because of all of the inputs. That's just data, right? It's just zeros and ones being calculated to display pictures and interconnect with a game playback. But, you know, it all kind of started from, just a bunch of nerds making video games, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And maybe to kind of dive in a little bit more deeply on the game or more game development parts of NVIDIA's offerings. And I know this is, again, a rounding error compared to the data center business, but probably something for our audience in terms of the game development. If you're a game developer, that you should be aware of. And I won't talk about the consumer side of the business, like the graphics cards and GeForce Now cloud gaming. But in terms of like the more game developer focused offerings, probably two things to be aware of is NVIDIA ACE and Omniverse. And so ACE stands for Avatar Cloud Engine, and this is basically a set of tools to create and operate digital avatars with generative AI. And these AI models can be run both locally on a PC or in the cloud. And the focus for ACE is to help developers customize and tune AI models to make it as easy as possible to create digital avatars. And it basically, ACE is kind of like a catch-all for a suite of tools like audio to face, which basically allows you to create facial expressions that match audio. Live portrait is animation of 2D portraits or stylized human faces using a live video feed. Maxine, which helps enable augmented reality effects using AI. Riva is a speech and translation AI SDK. Nemo is a cloud framework that helps developers build and deploy their own generative AI models. And finally, I think game developers should also check out the Kairos demo from NVIDIA, where they have partnered with a good friend of mine, Convey, to enable conversational AI capabilities for in-game NPCs. And there's some other stuff in that mix as well, but I believe those are like the main set of tools under ACE. And then there's Omniverse. And you know, I think like some of the metaverse stuff has died down a little bit, but eventually I think metaverse stuff will likely come back. But Omniverse is a compute platform to create 3D worlds. And it's also based on a 3D framework called OpenUSD. USD standing for Universal Scene Description, which is a format that was originally proposed by Pixar. But it's kind of like a FAW format, but more than that, it in that it can describe and enable interoperability of 3D content in virtual worlds. But anyway, not to go into too much more detail than that, but for game developers who want to build 3D worlds or metaverse applications, NVIDIA has their Omniverse kit, which is similar to NVIDIA ACE, a suite of apps, tools, and capabilities to, in this case, with Omniverse, help speed up workflows and enable interoperability for 3D worlds.
Yeah, USD is important. It's been likened to, you know, HTML is the language of the 2D internet. You know, USD is the language of the 3D internet, the metaverse. And so as that continues to build and we get closer to it, it's a very powerful toolkit that, you know, NVIDIA sits at the center of as well. So these are totally really cool things. And I also think it's important. I mean, this is where you get a little bit big brained and this, you know, before all of the AI boom, even when NVIDIA was, people were already alleging that the stock was overvalued before all of this, you know, part of the bull case of the story was not just that they're a chip company, but they're an integrated systems and software company as well, right? And they have all these optionalities with enterprise software subscriptions across AI, game development, metaverse, and industrial internet and things like that, right? And, you know, I think when you put it all together, what you really need to think about, and this is kind of a quote that I took from there was a long article in the New Yorker, I think it was late last year or early this year, from about Jensen Huang. And the end of it was a quote from him that basically went along the lines of, the future language of computing is human. And so all of these technologies, all of these chips and software and systems together, the guiding vision is always, you know, even I think Jensen's even been quoted as saying recently, don't send your kids to learn coding anymore, because in the future, they're just going to talk to computers and computers are going to write code for themselves, right? And so I think when you think about it in that lens and you start to think about where all these pieces fit together, you really get a, you know, not just a picture of a company that's a critical supplier of chips for AI, but a company that's really reimagining how we interact with technology in the digital world.
Right. And just kind of shifting gears to future drivers of growth, but maybe like a high level recap overview in terms of their lines of business, and the way that NVIDIA breaks out their lines of business and their financial is data center, which we've talked about and is like the biggest contributor at this point. Gaming, which is largely their consumer gaming stuff. And then you got these small areas, right? Professional visualization, auto OEM, and other, which what we're saying is like compared to data center and to a lesser degree gaming, it's basically, I think the growth and the value of this company is really going to be driven based upon the data center stuff or how they imagine enabling the simulation of human intelligence in some way. So I guess
it's like when you look at Microsoft and you say, you know, gaming, Microsoft is relevant to gaming and even more so after buying Activision, but gaming's still kind of not relevant for the investment case of Microsoft. Like it's a rounding, it's an afterthought, right? And it's kind of the same thing here is that, you know, this data center business has just gotten so large so fast that, you know, that's just where you need to pay attention.
Right. And so when we think about like the growth of the company, with the key focus on data center, I think the big question is really around, so how much more growth is there, right? So we're talking about huge infrastructure deployment to enable a lot of these capabilities, such as what Tesla's trying to do with Vision, what ChatGPT is doing. And so what does like the longer term steady state revenue and margin picture look like? And I think one thing for our audience to remember is that with most new technology, we're probably going to see some form of technology hype cycle where we kind of get really excited about something, overinvest, then there's kind of like this depression. And then after the depression, we kind of figure things out and resolve over time how to fill that capacity that was overinvested into. And as somebody who many years ago worked in the optical networking industry as a management consultant, I saw this play out firsthand. It's like, you know, everyone's building out all this fiber, all this internet capacity. It was overinvested in. And over time, it just kind of filled itself out. So anyway, what do you guys think? Brian, do you have any thoughts in terms of future growth?
I just got some PTSD from optical companies, but I mean, look, I mean, the acceleration of AI has ballooned super quick and pretty broad in terms of industries. It's happened just suddenly. The financials, industrials, automotive, consumer technology, healthcare, pharmaceuticals, just to name a few. And so consequently, we're seeing a huge refresh of modern data center architecture. And while GPUs are a huge part of that, it's also an interconnect and networking with things like InfiniBand, which you know they acquired with the Mellanox transaction. That spending binge you just referenced, it can be reactionary because many companies see AI as one of those do or die scenarios. And we haven't really seen one of these at this scale probably since the early days of e-commerce. But you know, nearly every management team around today lived through that experience. It wasn't that long ago, and they're spending hand over fist. You know, but this is just for like absolute size. This is a $1 trillion installed base of hardware that needs to turn over almost completely in the not too distant future. So there will be some deceleration at some point. And I don't think folks will necessarily spend blindly unless they're seeing an ROI, but we're already seeing a lot of green shoots where this is making an impact. A good one is recently Klarna suggesting that an AI assistant is now settling 2/3 of customer service requests. A substantial amount of long-term savings, even near-term savings, or American Express, for instance, improving fraud detection accuracy by 6% using AI. The notion of like ASICs hitting the market and competitive products from AMD or Intel is, you know, certainly worth taking into consideration. But there's a pretty severe first mover advantage in this, and a lot of lessons learned from already being engaged with dozens of the biggest and best companies in their own respective industries. And I would say like, CTOs generally don't get fired for buying the best of breed solutions, you know, and these competitive threats come up with nearly every new business for NVIDIA. At one point, it was perceived to be a big threat for crypto mining with ASICs and things like that. But I think that's a little different because the spend binge popped before it really mattered. But also, in the context of a $1 trillion refresh, there's room for more than one competitor out there. But you know, that's going to be a hard one to knock down.
Yeah, I would add a couple things to echo what Brian said, but he covered it really well. Is, you know, if we're going from a market where, you know, maybe accelerated compute was like plus or minus, you know, in the tens of billions of dollars, and it's going to be hundreds of billions. And NVIDIA had 80% of it before. Even if that market goes to, you know, 100 billion, whatever the number is, from in the 10s, 20s, whatever, and their market share goes from 80 to 60, they're still growing exponentially, right? And so it really doesn't, like, I think people expect them to lose market share, expect there to be more competition. But, you know, this is where I think you have to look at more than just a chip, because already today there are chips that on paper are more powerful than NVIDIA GPUs for data science and AI, right? Like on paper, they can do things better than an H100 can. But the problem is an H100 is not a standalone thing. You don't just plug it in and poof, you have an AI machine, right? You need networking, you need storage, you need memory, you need all the different parts of a server, you need, you know, fiber optics again, right? And so when you start to think about how NVIDIA has built systems and not just chips, how they've added the software, they control the CUDA ecosystem, which is the default for AI researchers and AI engineers in terms of the software interface to interact with these chips. When you start to put it all together, Mellanox being, which in hindsight might end up being one of the greatest acquisitions of all time when you think about how it's positioned NVIDIA to control InfiniBand here, as opposed to Ethernet networking. I mean, all of this together is what differentiates NVIDIA. And so when people come out and say, oh, well, Broadcom's got a chip coming out and it's more powerful, well, that doesn't really mean shit, because unless you can show me how that's going to fit into a system and be more competitive on a price per performance basis, because that's really the trade-off, right? Yes, Broadcom can make a chip. They can make an excellent chip. Hocktan's an excellent operator and that company runs like a machine. But what's the performance look like, and what's the cost benefit and what's the cost trade-off for the performance trade-off of what you're getting by buying that solution, right? And when you look around the landscape, no one can compete with NVIDIA on a cost per performance basis yet.
And for me, the way that I'm kind of thinking about future growth for NVIDIA is really in three areas. And the first is really around current applications. Brian, you mentioned a lot of different verticals that AI is being applied to, but and Matthew, you mentioned kind of this notion of having this kind of conversational or dialogue-based AI interface to data and to people, including customer service, like the Klarna, Klarna service that you mentioned, Brian. But you know, there's also data analysis, creation of charts, and deep analysis over big chunks of data, generative AI around content. You mentioned fraud detection, computer-aided drug discovery in healthcare, and automation of previously very manually oriented tasks. So there's like this current set of applications that we're already seeing that we're deploying against, and it's got a lot of room to run. And then I think the tricky part then is to think about the second area, which is around new applications. And I think this is what's going to determine the difference between how much overhang there is before we kind of catch up. When I brought up the example of having overinvested in, like, you know, in network bandwidth and fiber and things like that. And so I think we're in the early days of figuring out what AI can do. But I think in a similar way, we likely will see crazy new applications that nobody has thought of before. And so when we think about the hype cycle and the eventual additional growth that NVIDIA has to run and to deliver GPUs and chips to enable the new applications, that's the big question mark. How much more is that going to be? And then the third area I think about is around replacement. And Klarna is the example that I really think about when I think about replacement. So you mentioned the replacement, Brian, of customer service representatives. And I think, if I remember correctly, it was around like 700 customer service representatives were replaced. And in fact, AI actually outperformed their human counterparts in several areas. And so this kind of use case of human replacement, because AI fundamentally is about the ability to mimic human behavior and speech, I think we should expect workplace replacement as a major application across a potentially huge part of worldwide GDP. And on top of this, it's not just like you know, it's also going to be with things like Tesla Optimus and Boston Dynamics out there as well. We're now also going to be able to consider real world interfaces with bots, meaning real physical bots. And once you add thinking capabilities, that human intelligence, to locomotion and fine motor skills with fingers and hands and things like that, all of a sudden there's a significantly sort of greater universe of human replacement that becomes possible. And so then that should drive, from an NVIDIA perspective, a big need for vision, and instead of LLM models, for a huge push into like imitation models to deliver against human replacement. You know, Tesla FSD V12 is a good real world demo of what's possible with vision and imitation models. So then that should also drive continued growth of NVIDIA's business. I think the short of all this is that it's not clear how soon this run for NVIDIA hypergrowth ends without significant competition, but I think the full extent to scale before we overinvest could be a really big run. I mean, in my opinion, I'm more optimistic on NVIDIA, but I think that we've got a really long way to go. And on top of that, as per some of the things that you just mentioned, Matthew, as far as like InfiniBand and some of the other stuff, where that's creating a bigger competitive moat, which places NVIDIA in a pretty prime position to like really hold a fairly monopoly status over a pretty long period of time, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Brian though. Like, I do think that enterprises will start to need to see an ROI on these investments within the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Or that investment cadence will slow. Like, for example, it sounds like Microsoft Copilot's kind of been slow out of the gate for enterprise, or at least slower than some people expected. You know, those are kind of the incremental data points that you need to kind of look out for and say, like, we're building this infrastructure to support the software applications to run on top of it. If the software applications aren't scaling, people are going to slow down their infrastructure investments, right? And so that's kind of, you know, where it's at. So I fully agree there. I'll also note that a lot of the supply chain bottlenecks that existed 12 months ago for GPUs, and specifically AI chips, and is pretty much negated at this point. I mean, I think lead times are still longer than they traditionally were, like pre-ChatGPT, but they're still way below where they were like 6 months ago at this point, right? We've had, you know, a lot more HBM3 memory supply come online, a lot more Cobos packaging. I mean, we can go deep into all the technologies that are involved in the supply chain, but the advanced packaging, the specific types of memory that needs to be used, some of the networking components, even some of the assembly by the OEMs and the SMCIs of the world that are making the actual systems for NVIDIA, you know, a lot of those bottlenecks have been cleared, or, you know, cleared up enough where supply constraints are less of an issue as well. And so that's also something that I'm watching, and this kind of gets into the outlook and everything. But, you know, when demand always outstrips supply, it's impossible to know where things end, because keeping up with the supply chain and how much they can deliver is always a guessing game. People try to do all their surveys, but it's always a guessing game. Once supply catches up, that's when you're really guessing on demand now. And it's not an easy thing to look at. And that's why all these ancillary data points like Copilot and things like that are important indicators of where demand is going to continue to be.
Right. And so I think if I'm understanding you correctly, Matthew, like the two points you're bringing up, one is like, and I guess you originally brought this up, Brian, is like the economic case, because if the economic case isn't there for a lot of these new applications, and for whatever reason, you can't build a business out of these capabilities that you're enabling with AI, then people aren't going to be buying more NVIDIA chips. I'm a little bit more optimistic on that end, just because some of the specific use cases I'm seeing, especially from a game development perspective, the value contributed by AI seems to be so large that it seems like, at least for these current sets of applications, that there are going to be a number of applications where the value is clearly there, and, you know, exactly where that's priced and, you know, how much margin flows back to the to the developers of those capabilities. It seems like I'm kind of optimistic there. And do your second point seems to be about bottlenecks. And, you know, I think besides supply, the other thing I would think about would be from an operational perspective, and like, do we have enough energy to like, you know, power all of this stuff in the future? And I know that's something that Elon Musk has brought up as a potential problem. And I think he mentioned like transformers as well as like energy and things like that. So we'll see if we run into some of those bottlenecks, but that could be something that stunts their growth in the future as well.
Well, I will just add, and, you know, I think the reason that Brian and I both brought that up is, mm-hmm. you know, we come from the financial background where we always think about the worst case scenario. And especially when a stock is up 7x in 12 months, you know, the negative reflexivity of the stock price to any ancillary bad news is going to be huge, right? And so that's why you need to think these things through. You know, for example, we're recording this, it's March 14th. Happy Pi Day, by the way. Adobe just printed, and everyone thought Adobe is going to be a big AI winner because, like, look at all the creative power that's going to be unleashed by AI. But it actually turns out that maybe AI is a huge competitive threat for them as well as an enabler. And so NVIDIA stock actually did after hours is always after hours, but NVIDIA stock did a little drop and rallied back after hours on that Adobe print, right? And so, you know, that's kind of like that negative reflexivity that you have to be cognizant of. That's just a good example of that as well.
Yeah, I think NVIDIA is a really good and a really interesting demonstration on valuation. There's a lot of ways that management teams try to drive shareholder value and share price increases, but the number one always has been and always will be growth. And we have not seen growth at this scale ever. The $1 trillion market cap figure is still reasonably rare, with only seven companies breaching that level. It's Microsoft, it's Apple, NVIDIA, Saudi Aramco, Amazon, Google, Meta, and then just a little bit behind there is Berkshire, TSMC, and Eli Lilly, rounding out the top 10. So NVIDIA at this point in time is outgrowing all of those by magnitudes. It might be a smaller company from a revenue perspective, but the revenue the growth is still, you know, usurping all of those things. So over like the next 12 months, we'll grow slow. So almost absolutely, but AI spend isn't going to dissipate in a crypto fashion. And a theme and a trend as important as AI isn't going to be a one and done upgrade, right? Like NVIDIA has developed a really intense sales motion over the years from its gaming roots and pushing for refreshes with stronger chipsets and software. They're not just standing still. It's also really important to understand that we're in a bull market. Valuations are stretching higher across a ton of subsectors that I follow within tech. So if you're of the belief that we're due for a correction, of course, NVIDIA will pull back on big market drawdowns. But, you know, PMs will start looking for more value and turnaround stories, whatever. But fundamentally, NVIDIA is firing on all cylinders. And when that appetite resumes, those are usually the first companies to get bought. So this boils down to really two main risks for stocks and absent general market malaise, numbers risk, like deteriorating fundamentals, which is hard to see in the medium term with demand still delicately outstripping supply. It's narrative risk too, or saying that another way, if you believe AI is too hyped and not a durable theme, but at this point, I can't really get behind either one of those. And Matt kind of alluded to this already, but the double-edged sword is, you know, if you're tethering your company to a hype train, that comes with increased expectations. If you want to receive the premium afforded to story stocks, you need to accelerate and maintain above market growth. And if you don't, that premium can compress awful quick. This isn't really relevant to NVIDIA, given they're at the tip of the spear, but I do think we'll see more single name dispersion going forward as some companies will inevitably miss that mark. You know, an earlier Matt referenced an $18 billion Q4 in data center revenues. That's up 27% sequentially and 4x year over year. NVIDIA last quarter, if you go back to Q3, they guided Q4 to total revenues of $20 billion. Street estimates push that to $21 billion, right? So like analysts over the course of the last 3 months raised those numbers so that the average was $21 billion. So a $1 billion beat. And then the buy side was expecting a further $1 billion beat on top of that, which NVIDIA beat. That beat is bigger than some revenue lines for a lot of, you know, software companies out there that are worth $20 billion. So this, again, this is just like not something you really want to step in front of and just something that we haven't really encountered before at this scale. You'd have to go back to like the tech boom and things like that, the early one, 2000s, to see growth of this in any sort. And much smaller companies, mind you. And then, you know, sometimes you'll see 400% growth in like a Series A software company or something like that, but not in the public markets and not 30 years after inception. It's just absolutely insane.
Let me put the growth figures that you referenced and I referenced earlier as just in maybe a perspective that other listeners of this podcast might better grasp. They added roughly $4 billion of data center revenue sequentially in the last quarter. That's two Monopoly Goes, so it's fairly profitable. Sorry, I had to.
Yeah, and compared to other companies, though, what in terms of like from a multiples evaluation perspective, Matthew, you mentioned when we first started that they're not that expensive at over $2 trillion in market cap. I think just looking here, over 70 P ratio. Like, what are the specific multiples, or how should we be thinking about valuation for NVIDIA?
I mean, I'll probably get shit on, and this is going to be probably a quotable moment when the stock rises from here, but valuation really doesn't matter. And here's why. And Stacey Rasgon, who's a very well-respected chip analyst at Bernstein, has made this point for several years now, you know, through the cycles with NVIDIA going up and down, going back a decade. The valuation has never mattered because it's always been wrong, in the sense that even if you're looking at forward multiples, consensus numbers that go into forward multiples have always been lagging what they actually do. For example, if you look at how not only are they beating consensus numbers every quarter, but there's like the whisper bogey numbers that like the buy side puts together. And it's usually, you know, in the case of NVIDIA, it can be 10 to 20% above like what those consensus sell side numbers are. And they're even beating those bogey numbers that people try to benchmark to, right? And so, you know, you can look at it and say, oh, it's trading at 40 times forward earnings still. It's expensive. Yeah, but it's also growing earnings 400% year on year, right? And that 40 times is based on estimates that are probably too low anyways, right? And so that when I say the valuation doesn't matter, I say that in the sense that the inputs to calculate that valuation metric aren't necessarily reflective of the reality that has come to be and many foresee will be, right? And so, you know, I know that's a very quotable line to say the valuation doesn't matter, but in the sense of looking at these specific metrics, when you pull up Yahoo Finance or whatever site you're using, you need to understand that that's not telling you the full picture and it's not fully encompassing, right? If you kind of step back and you say, how many companies in the world are going to, let's get through this hypergrowth cycle and just think, can they grow 20% annually at some steady state? Maybe. Can they do that at 65%, 70% operating margins, which by the way, are basically software margins, actually potentially, because they have this technology moat, right? And you start to think about what that looks like on a long-term basis, the valuation is not egregious at that point.
Yeah, and it's kind of very speculative, right? Because as we mentioned before, when we think about future growth, there's so many variables that can go into, you know, how much room to run do the current applications have? Nobody really knows. What are the new applications that are going to be that can potentially drive future growth and sales of GPU capabilities? And so, yeah, it does seem like, to your point, valuation, not that it doesn't matter in my perspective, but it's just like, it's so speculative. And so you would have to have a strong, to make that determination, you'd have to have a strong perspective in terms of the growth and the overall scale of the business in a steadier state longer term. And then to the point on competition that we talked about before, you know, how much market share will NVIDIA be able to keep in this major, massive, potentially once in a lifetime kind of like industry that we're seeing? And so maybe I could bring that point up again in terms of competition. We have already talked about some of the things that you talked about, Brian and Matthew, in terms of, you know, whether it's InfiniBand or Kudo, and, you know, in their financials, NVIDIA talks about, they talk about two things specifically with respect to competition, which is like having a platform strategy, bringing together the hardware, systems, software, algorithms, libraries together is kind of like a full stack offering. And then they also mentioned that they've invested over $45.3 billion in R&D with a bunch of inventions and things like that that are required for their current service offering. And so from a competitive standpoint, like if you're a venture investor thinking to fund a company to go up against NVIDIA, do you need $45 billion to compete with them? Do you guys have any further thoughts on competitors? Can anybody compete with NVIDIA longer term? How much should investors be scared about competition for NVIDIA?
Well, it won't come from venture. right?
It's too big.
There's been companies for every cycle of chips in the last four decades.
Well, it might come from venture, because remember Sam Altman was trying to raise like a trillion.
Yeah, whatever. That's not gonna, I mean, whatever. If Masa wants to do Masa things, that's fine. But I mean, at the end of the day, there's only so much, and a lot of that trillion would just go to ASML probably, right? Because I mean, to build a 3-nanometer fab, it costs $30 billion now. And I think 2-nanometer is going to be closer to $50 billion, and they're talking 1-nanometer is going to be $100 billion. So like, you know, most of that would just go to Semicap anyways, which I've talked to you guys at length about why, you know, I have a love affair with Semicap, but that's another conversation. But in general, like, you know, for all of this to happen, all this competition, none of that changes the software ecosystem. None of that changes the networking. None of that changes the memory. None of that changes the packaging, the relationship with TSMC, all of these things that exist today that individually might not be the biggest moats, but collectively together is what differentiates NVIDIA. And, you know, in the long run, is it going to be 100%? Is it going to be 80%? No, I said that. I think the market share of accelerated compute goes to something like 40 or 50%, just like we saw with Intel, right? In the data center with CPUs, right? But the market's also going 10x larger. So that's still very good. And there will be Google ASICs and Microsoft ASICs and Meta ASICs and Chinese ASICs and all these other chips. And there'll be an AMD chip, and there will be a Broadcom, which goes into an ASIC package, right? All of these things will exist, but that doesn't matter if we don't answer all of the other questions collectively.
It's hard to think about semiconductor companies that have successfully raised venture and had some sort of public entree and a huge market cap at the end of the day. And it hasn't really changed over much in the last 20 years or so. There's some things like Mobileye or something like that that kind of grew and then got acquired. But at some point in time, they just get acquired. There's that walk away check where it no longer makes sense to compete.
Part of that's also due to the state of the semiconductor industry, right? You have these large companies that, you know, for example, take Broadcom, right? Fantastic company. It's run operationally. It's probably one of the best run companies in the world in terms of how they manage the P&L. But they gut like R&D and everything. And then they just, you know, they buy R&D effectively, right? And so, you know, there's also an argument to be made. And we saw this in the gaming industry too, like in the late 2010s, right? There was a ton of M&A, which soaked up a lot of the talent and a lot of these upstart companies before they went public, before they hit significant scale as private companies, right? And so you've seen that in the chip industry as well. And that's a consideration as well, that like, if one of these venture-backed companies has a, you know, eureka moment and something amazing, they're going to get acquired. Intel will spend God's amount of money to buy that, or someone will.
Yeah, and the Broadcom model is generally not startup-driven. It's more so finding the number one or number two competitor in any space that is kind of sleepy and doesn't really have a lot of competition, and then raising the prices a shitload and firing everybody. But, you know, that's not how this is going to go.
I think Broadcom's the wrong example there, but it just kind of was in my mind. But
Intel would definitely pay up for it.
Yeah. Intel, you've seen Broadcom do it. You've seen other companies where they pay up for you know, other technologies to buy versus build.
Yeah. I mean, competition, it's funny because, like, if that's the major knock on NVIDIA now, this is the least controversial I've seen this stock in 15 years, which is part of the reason why it's so, you know, extraordinarily large now. But there was always something else, competition for every single business unit they've been in. But this is the first theme I've seen that isn't being, you know, pooed away. And it's just like, it's a very loved stock at the moment. And those things tend not to reverse themselves in an instant, and certainly not from like an upstart or a competitor. But, you know, could be wrong.
All right. Well, maybe we can end with just your thoughts. I know NVIDIA is highly speculative. There's a lot of variables surrounding the company, but more with respect to like valuation. But in terms of the future outlook for the company, what do you guys think? Where do you see this company? Do you believe in its future growth and continued increase in valuation moving forward?
You want to start, Matt?
I'll give you my answer after I go to GDC next week and see how many black leather jackets are worn around San Fran, right? That'll be a proxy, right? Because if everyone's dressing like Jensen Huang, then we're in a bad spot, right? But no, I think, you know, I mentioned kind of what I read in some of his interviews and everything and kind of his vision for technology. And it is a big brain, you know, what is this guy smoking type of concept, but we're already starting to see it, right? Did you ever think that you could just type into a computer and it, you know, English, and it could write code for you, right? Like 2 years ago, that would have been a foreign concept. And it's like, no, that's the Matrix. Like that's sci-fi. And here we are today, and that's reality. ChatGPT and all of these AI chatbots can take regular text interface and spit out Python or whatever other code you're working in, right? And so like we're already seeing some of this come to fruition today. Is it perfect? No. We're very early in this, right? But I think when you start to kind of think about how we rethink how humans engage with technology and digital interfaces, and when you think about NVIDIA's position centrally to so many aspects of that, that's that big brain argument that's like, wow, this, you know, this is not just a chip company. This is not just a GPU company. This is a company for the next phase of the industrial revolution, you know, the AI revolution, the, you know, how we rethink that connectivity with digital technologies.
I think it's also just like, who's buying NVIDIA? Is it, if this is from like a professional standpoint, it's a bit more nuanced than just being able to own NVIDIA, right? That's not necessarily their job. There's you're balanced against an index, you're funding volatility, you're hedging, and all these other things. But you know, as like a PA or like a idea for a single person, is there the opportunity to maybe own this 5 or 10% lower? Absolutely. I mean, it could happen in the next 5-6 months. But if you zoom out and look ahead, you know, a year or two, I don't see a reason why this can't be the most valuable company in the world. Mainly because just, again, it's just growing like a weed, and I don't really see any signs of that stopping in over the next 12 to 18 months. And like dollar for dollar, would you rather own this or Apple or, you know, Meta or, you know, everything has its own little quirks and things like that. But I've never seen something growing this fast and in a state where you're entering into potentially one of the biggest themes that we've ever seen. And, you know, we're old enough now, all of us are, to make it through e-commerce and the internet and all this other crazy shit. But this is just crazier.
Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that market cycles don't happen. Like you said, ignoring market cycles, here is the bear case. Well, market cycles can happen, right? We just saw bad inflation numbers this week. And so, you know, who knows what that's going to mean to, you know, the long-term outlook for macro things. And NVIDIA is such a large component in so many indices, right? It's going to be affected by the macro. But stripping that away and just looking at the risk specifically for NVIDIA, I agree with Brian that in the decade plus that I've been covering stocks and stocks like NVIDIA, this is the least fundamental risk I've ever seen for it. I do think you have to watch some of those ancillary KPIs like ROIs on Copilot and things like that. That'll be a good proxy for enterprise sentiment around investment in data center infrastructure for AI. But like, other than that, you know, this is just, I agree with exactly what Brian said. Like, look at Apple, right? How many regulators are coming for Apple right now? There's so many more risks than so many other stocks. If you want to talk about some of the more speculative, like AI stocks, like Supermicro and Big Bear AI, like absolutely, that's a completely different conversation. But have you ever seen a company of the quality of fundamentals of NVIDIA? We're looking at a software company that makes chips in terms of the profitability profile of the company, and you know, and they are central, and they have significant market share, and they have competitive moats. Like it's anyone that just says, oh, it's a bubble. Like, you know, they just don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I personally believe that the way I fundamentally think about this is just in terms of the potential scale for growth. And for me, AI is similar to the internet. And there's some people who think it's even a bigger innovation than the internet. And so when we think about the potential growth from here, in that NVIDIA, and I don't understand the competitive dynamics well enough, but it seems like they've got like, you know, a iron grip lock on this market that, you know, this we're talking about potentially a once in a lifetime occurrence in terms of technology innovation. and you have a company that has strong leadership, you know, and potentially a very, very, very strong competitive moat. So I don't know. I'm very optimistic. I think that of any company that can hit 10 trillion in market cap, I think this is probably it. I mean, I factor in a little bit of inflation there too, but like, I think it's, you know, for me, it's NVIDIA or Tesla. And it, you know, as far as the leadership is concerned, you know, we were kind of joking in our private Slack about how much nobody cared about what Jensen Huang said until NVIDIA had its run. And, you know, to some degree, I think people do focus a little bit too much on the messenger rather than the message. But from all this stuff I've been seeing about Jensen, the more I learn about him, the more I am impressed by him. Dude's pretty wise. He's practical. He's a visionary. And, you know, I've spoken out against a number of management teams on previous episodes that we've recorded here. So it's not like I'm a fanboy at all of most companies, but here I would say I'm jumping on the Jensen bandwagon, and I think he's a really strong leader. And I think that matters, especially for these companies where if you have a leader like him, he can really help drive it to, you know, a lot of growth and to help them maintain their competitive moat. So long story short, huge fan, super optimistic, fingers crossed that NVIDIA hits 10 trillion. And the only other thing I would say is
I hope so too, because then I can retire.
The only other thing I would say is, like, I hope we can also, just because our audience and because we're Pixels and Profits with the focus of our audience of game developers, that we see more coming out of NVIDIA ACE and other partnerships to help enable game developers to do more stuff with NVIDIA. But, you know, that's just a personal wish list from me. So with that, sweet. Is that any other parting comments, or is that a wrap, guys?
So everyone, when you go to GDC next week, count those black jackets. You know, if we get a if we get a large majority of people walking around San Fran wearing black leather jackets, that's your signal that we've hit the top. That's my call.
All right, cool. Well, with that, guys, we will catch y'all later. And there you have it. That's our take on NVIDIA. Thanks, guys.